Hello and welcome to the Bureau Podcast. I'm Matt Cowan, the Bureau Chief and your host. It's great to be back after a short hiatus. Now that I've said that, it's got me thinking, how long does a break have to be before it becomes a hiatus? I suppose I should Google it. Anyway, thank you for listening in from wherever you are around the world. I've got a great show for you coming up. I'll be having a quick chat with Saigon Hospitality Insider and Harper's Bazaar Editor-at-Large Chris Thompson for the latest trends and updates in the F&B scene here in Saigon. And then we'll deep dive into the world of micro-influencers, Facebook and Google with the Bureau's own Melanie Kasul, who also happens to lecture on digital marketing at RMIT Vietnam. And finally, we'll wrap things up with Get Excited and a new cheeky little segment that I've called Insta-Worthless. So stick around for that or fast forward to it, whatever you please. Now, are you ready? Let's get into it. Well, it's an understatement to say that it's been a challenging year for all of us. Now, perhaps one of the industries that's been hit the hardest is the hospitality industry. Its struggles have been well documented, but if we could put a positive spin on things for a moment, we'd say Vietnam's restaurants and bars have been more fortunate than many others around the world. And I believe at the moment, as of September 5, venues can operate in Vietnam under restrictions if they have a restaurant or cafe license, while those operating on bar licenses are to remain closed for now. Indeed, sometimes positives come out of what seem like hopeless situations, which is certainly the case with COVID-19 in some corners of the business community. In hospitality, it's forced restaurants and bars to be more agile and more inventive with the way they do things in order to survive. One example that springs to mind is Sol Butcherant in Saigon's District 7, a steak restaurant that until recently had never opened for breakfast, but it's now teamed up with the famous Pho Thin from Hanoi to offer Wagyu and Black Angus pho among other breakfast dishes, and the turnaround of the business has been remarkable. At weekends, people have been waiting in line just to get a bowl of the good stuff. And it's good, quite a bit pricier than the usual stuff, but hey, no one's holding a gun to your head to eat it. And then there are the cocktail bars that have added cocktail deliveries to their menus in an effort to keep cash flow ticking over, and bartenders doing their social media videos and so on for their followers to stay relevant. But in order to get the best insight into what's happening here, I've got Saigon-based Harper's Bazaar Vietnam Editor-in-Chief Chris Thompson on the line. Chris, thank you for being on the show.
Good afternoon, Matt.
Now, you appeared on this show earlier in the year when Vietnam first put in place its social distancing measures, which at the time heavily disrupted the way bars and restaurants went about their business. And you made a few predictions on what might come out of that in terms of adjustments to what was previously the norm. I think you mentioned deliveries would become more popular, packaging and improved customer service in general. Is that what you've observed since then?
I think so, Matt. I think with the home deliveries themselves, that's become self-evident over the last few months. We talked about packaging as well. A real trend coming out of that has been some of the cocktail bars making their own pre-mixed cocktails, and they're still available
right. And
selling well at the moment. And customer service, for me, has been the key thing that's come out of this. I think we found that bars and restaurants have had to work even harder to earn and retain the loyalty of their customers. And you've seen them working much harder and engaging and interacting with their customers more, which can only be a good thing and a trend that I think will be consolidated as we move forward into hopefully a COVID-free 2021.
Right. In my introduction to this segment, I mentioned a steak restaurant in District 7 that appears to have turned a negative into a positive by partnering up with a famous brand and offering breakfast for the first time. And that looks to be a resounding success already. Are there any bars or restaurants that you know of in Saigon or in Vietnam that have adapted really well to the current circumstances?
Well, Matt, I think if I can stay at least within the hospitality sector, I actually spent a day about 2 weeks ago with David Kay, the brand director of Wink Hotels.
Okay, yep.
Wink Hotels, they're going to be opening fairly soon. And I think that really is a great example of a business that's trying to be fit for the future. It's a business whereby they've looked at the whole value chain, if you like, of a guest experience, and they've tried to reduce cost wherever possible while still keeping the core elements of what the guest wants from the and needs from their stay. It's going to be very interesting when Wink Hotels open up. And I think also from a food and beverage perspective, they're going to have a very, very tight and focused menu. And they're going to be doing some really cool stuff around technology as well.
Right.
Particularly around the check-in experience. Okay. You know, around that whole experience of leaving deposits and so on. And also making it much easier for guests to order quickly. And, you know, get ready for some really interesting vending machines that they've got in the pipeline.
So is it going to be sort of more automated, sort of more down the Japan sort of track of hotels and checking in?
I believe so.
Will there be a robot? They're going to have...
Almost.
Okay.
Almost. But
interesting.
You might need to do a bit of the lifting yourself. They may not have as many guys, you know, about waiting to help you with your bags and so on. I guess with luggage now, with all the wheels and that type of thing, it's not too much of an issue.
Right.
So I believe they're just looking to strip out costs where they don't think it's necessary.
Yep.
But still making it a memorable experience. It's got a great location. And you'd be expecting that most of the room rates would be below $100 a night.
Wow. Okay. And do you have a time when that or a date when that is planned to be opened?
I believe it's in the next couple of months.
Okay.
I mean, when I was in the office, they looked really well staffed. They were resourced up and ready to go by the looks of it.
Right. Now,
I guess at the moment, any kind of opening date always seems to be taken with a pinch of salt, doesn't it?
Right.
So maybe they've had a few issues with the current situation about when they're ready to absolutely go. But I'm hoping to be one of the first to go and have an overnight stay and check it out.
To stay in the penthouse. Have they got a penthouse?
Well, I don't believe they will. I guess that's an example of But I believe the penthouse will be where they'll have a nice bar and restaurant
right.
and so on.
Yeah, it sounds good. It sounds exciting. Now, I want to touch on trends in food and beverage in Saigon for a moment. What have you noticed this year, and where do you think things are heading in terms of food and drink trends in 2020 into 2021?
I was thinking about this earlier, and I would group the trends into three main categories. I'm seeing a more value-conscious consumer.
Right.
I think consumers are becoming more safety first. They're taking less risks when it comes to their nights out. And I'm very much seeing an emergence of local talent.
Right.
So if I just go into a little bit more detail on this. I mean, actually, tomorrow night I'm going to the Park Hyatt, and that is a six-hands dinner. So three of the best chefs in town. You've got Adrian from Seoul, Peter from Annan, and Heath Gordon, the resident exec chef at the Park Hyatt.
Right.
Now, these tickets, they're actually 4 million dong per head. So it's not cheap, but it's still representing great value for money because of what you're going to get from that experience.
Right.
And people will research online a lot. They'll check out the menu beforehand. They'll draw on past experiences and so on. And they'll think, okay, 4 million for everything I'm going to get that night, that's still really good value for money. And I just think in general, consumers are looking to go to those places where they know they've got a great track record, a really good reputation. And I think that's why you're still seeing places like Quince and Annan and, you know, the Ox and so on, they're still managing to trade pretty well during these difficult times.
Right. Yeah, it is interesting that there's the Six Hands dinner on and it's priced at $4 million at this time. So perhaps people are maybe not going out as much and then sort of saving their pennies for these sort of one-off events, do you think?
Absolutely.
Right.
And if I look at myself as an example of that, gosh, you know, last year before all of this kicked in, I might be going out.
Right.
Three or four times a week, or you might be going out for lunch.
Yeah.
The same.
Right.
Whereas now you'll be a little bit more careful about when you do go out.
Right.
I'm certainly going out a little bit less this year than last year.
Yep. And do you think, you know, restaurants and bars with their social media, they've come up to speed with that, knowing that perhaps people are being more picky and more choosy on where they're going to go. So they'll tend to do more research before they make a decision on which restaurant or bar they're going to go to that night.
Yeah, I definitely think there's room for improvement there.
Right,
although
okay.
We've seen a lot of progress in the last 6 months, I do think there's room for improvement. And you know, when I talk a little bit about consumers being a little bit more safety first as well and wanting to make sure that where they do go is going to be a great experience. One of the things I've noticed is where you have restaurants who've got a resident chef who's been there for a long time with a really good reputation in the industry. You know, if I think about someone like George at Stoker or Heath now at the Park Hyatt.
Right.
When these guys actually make a post on Facebook and they say, hey guys, this is what we're going to have on the set lunch
right.
this week.
Yep.
It works.
Yeah, right. Yep.
I see a number of people, hey, I'm going to come down, I'm going to check this out. And then that person comes down, checks out what's on the lunch, and then they maybe make a post as well. And that might lead to several different customers coming into the restaurant purely at the genesis of the chef making that initial post.
Yeah, and it's quite a bit more personal than just boosting a Facebook post, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
So
sure.
It's a nice little push notification straight from the kitchen, and yeah, I think that does make an impact.
Mm.
And finally, Chris, where are the places to go at the moment for drinks and dinner in Saigon? Are there any discoveries you've made recently that aren't on the radar but should be?
Well, I still think that more and more people should go to Mia Saigon.
Okay.
It's in Bohin District 2. It's a great opportunity for some escapism because once you're there, you really could be in another city. I mean, it's beautiful by the river. They do a great breakfast, really good lunch. The dinner in the evening's great as well. And for those people still brunching on a Sunday, remains a great option.
I've been there too. I went there with you. It was pretty awesome, wasn't it? Amazing buffet.
And then you have our friends down at Quince, they're about to open as soon as the regulations will allow a really cool and funky bar upstairs.
Right.
It's going to be called Madame Q.
Okay.
And some of your listeners may have met Ivan, their new bartender, or sorry, their new bar manager. He's a very cool customer. He looks like a cross between Ragnar Lothbrok from Vikings and Justin Timberlake. And he's making some fantastic cocktails there.
So okay, awesome.
I know that he can't wait to show that off. It looks absolutely fantastic.
And
Madame Q.
Yep. And do you have any idea when that's due to open?
Well, I think as soon as the regulations will allow.
Right, okay.
There was thought that it was just about to open before Wave 2 started. So I think as soon as the bars are officially allowed to reopen, it could be ready to go.
Awesome. Sounds great.
And then there's one or two other places. You know, our friends down at Hype Asia.
Yep.
you know, around this time, I'm watching back in Europe at this soccer transfer window, and it seems like Hype Asia have announced a major transfer signing of their own. They've brought in Antoine Hook, who was at the Metropole in the Hotel des Arts. He's come in.
Okay.
To add a lot of firepower to their food and beverage offering. So,
and you know, I'm sure Hype Asia has multiple venues, right?
So they're the guys who've got Godmother Bacon Brunch.
Right.
They're involved with Octo, and they've got Bam Bam, they've got Commas, and they've recently, Matt, they've just introduced this fantastic new Japanese high-end sushi restaurant on Nguyen and Ninh called Rockefeller.
Ah, okay. I've heard of this place. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, that's a Hype Asia place. Okay, interesting. I need to check it out.
So that's going to be really good. And then I believe our old friend Peter Kung Franklin has got something up his sleeve. Yep. I'm not sure I'm allowed to share that yet. So
okay.
If you ever invite me back, I could share some more details.
Oh, well, that'll be interesting. He's always got interesting stuff going on, Peter.
So there you go, yeah.
Awesome. Well, as usual, Chris, thank you for your insights into Saigon's hospitality scene.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, hope to have you back soon.
Cheers, mate.
Bye-bye. Now to the prickly subject of social media influencers and social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram. Coincidentally, it was the topic of a new feature I've written that's out now on the Bureau website at thebureauasia.com called It Might Just Be Time to Unlike Facebook. Without giving away too much, it laments the power of Facebook and its algorithms and goes into how disheartening it can be for content creators like me when we see local businesses choosing to spend money on Facebook ads and boosts, especially when that money could go to supporting local influencers instead to tell the story. Believe me, it's extremely frustrating when a local business who calls for us to support them turns around themselves and gives money to a social media conglomerate that rakes in over $70 billion per year. But what can you do? The article goes on to explain the reasons behind why I've changed my strategy from a short-term social media-centric one to a longer-term and slower-burn Google SEO-centric one. Time will tell on that one. Still, it's a piece that makes a call to action to readers and businesses to think about their advertising spend more and to consider channels and platforms like this one, the Bureau. In the feature, PR and marketing professionals provide their opinions on why advertisers should consider investing more on influencers, especially ones with reliable channels. Someone who has extensive experience in marketing and communications and is currently a lecturer on RMIT Vietnam's digital marketing program is the Bureau's own Melanie Kasul. She's here at Bureau HQ to tell us more about trends in digital marketing and social media. Thanks for joining me, Mel.
Hey, Matt. Oh my gosh, it's such a long time. When was the last time we did this?
I think it was back in April or May.
Oh, wow. Yeah. During the first wave of the major coronavirus lockdown.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
wow.
And I think a little bit about that was, or the reason behind that was I got a bit tired of talking about COVID-19. So as listeners may have noticed so far, we're trying not to say the C word too much.
But, you know, I guess you can't avoid it. And
not
that's
really.
Actually going to be, you know, like a basis of a lot of things from now until, I don't know, maybe two, 3 years and beyond.
That's right. Now, Mel, you're lecturing on digital marketing at RMIT Vietnam.
That's right.
I'm going to ask what might seem a pretty obvious question.
Mm-hmm.
What is digital marketing exactly?
Digital marketing covers all marketing efforts that use smart devices or the internet. And many businesses, big or small, so they leverage these digital channels, such as like what you mentioned earlier, search engines, of course, social media, email, although not as effective as, you know, as most, but emails are pretty big for business-to-business marketing, websites and mobile apps. So all of these are used to connect or try to connect with current and prospective customers. The thing, though, is that most of the time when we think of digital marketing, it's always from the perspective of marketing communications or promotions, if you were to use the 4P marketing framework, or what we now call awareness.
Hang on just a minute. Can I jump in? 4Ps.
No, that's not relevant anymore.
Okay, right.
I was about to say.
Okay, sorry about that.
So I was about to say that most of the time we just think about it from the 4P marketing framework of promotions. You know, these days we now call it awareness in the 7A's marketing framework. So more than just awareness or promotions or marketing communications, digital marketing, especially in terms of fulfilling the needs of the service sector, not just, you know, products, but also the service sector, they should also act as a place where coordination, affinity, and most certainly a delivery channel as well. And if we focus on digital marketing solely on a Markham perspective, we also need to remember that it doesn't exist in a vacuum. Okay.
Right. Okay.
So marketers should also think about a holistic integrated Markham strategy, which should include, especially in a country like Vietnam, where actually TV is still king.
Right. Yeah? Yep.
So traditional advertising, including offline activation and public relations. But you know, it could be argued that only big brands can do that, and they would be right. So small, medium enterprises and startup businesses, and actually we have new business models right now where it's direct to customers, D2C. Mm. And they usually get into the ring primarily when you say digital marketing. It is using social media marketing primarily.
Right.
And associated with social marketing is, of course, our topic for this episode, which is influencer marketing.
Right. So throughout the course of the year, what trends have emerged globally, and have you noticed these trends in Saigon?
Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, I have to use the C word. multiple studies show that social media has received a significant and sustained boost in usage during the pandemic because everybody is at home. In May 2020, a Global Web Index survey, for example, showed that 32% of US internet users ages 16 to 64, they said that they were spending more and more time on social media because of the pandemic.
Right.
And people are online for news gathering, non-fake news preferred, of course.
Right.
Entertainment. Oh my gosh, Netflix to date has like 193 million subscribers worldwide.
Yeah, because I often wondered with the absence of ads on Netflix, how they generated their income.
Subscriptions.
Yes. Yep.
And, you know, so news gathering, entertainment, and as we saw here in Vietnam, the fulfillment of day-to-day functions such as ordering essential groceries online or using mobile apps for food deliveries, and a lot of the e-commerce websites like Lazada, Shopee, Tiki.
Yep.
So they've just become part of everyday life.
Right.
You know, so, and all of those, that omni-channel, that multi-channel ecosystem will not work without social media.
Right.
Yeah. So this has resulted in a big opportunity for digital marketers, especially here in Vietnam or in East Asia, where, you know, recovery from the pandemic, okay, sans the second wave, but, you know, still globally, we are ahead in this region. So that has created an uptick in ad spending in social media.
Right.
So here are a few more stats. Social Bakers, for example, recorded that in the first 3 weeks of April 2020, the average worldwide ad spend increased by 32.3%. And worldwide, Facebook CPC increased by 10%. Mm. Of course, in specific industries, For example, 51% increased spending for ads for beverages, 43.6% for beauty, and 43% for accommodation were also noted.
Interesting for accommodation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you know, scrolling through my social feed, I would say that I do see more sponsored posts from these three categories, yes. Whether or not the spending equals to, you know, actual
the return
on that spending is you know, we can't say for sure. In terms of influencer marketing, the pandemic has obviously disrupted the influencer marketing industry in general.
Right.
But the changes seen today, they've been there. They've been slowly getting there. It was just accelerated by the pandemic. For example, trends toward unfiltered or less scripted content.
Right.
The rise of TikTok.
I had one for a week. I just couldn't handle all the... I didn't even really start using it.
Mm.
And I just got bombarded by push notifications.
Yes.
And that drove me nuts.
So there you have those. And of course, you know, the popularity of everyday influencers such as you at Matt Cowan Saigon.
Just raging. Just so influential.
So the demand for more, you know, transparency of influencers, paid partnerships with brands have also been bubbling at the surface pre-pandemic. Mm. Do you remember that Firefest fiasco?
Yeah.
So
on Netflix that I saw, that's where I saw it.
They had a documentary on Netflix about it. So in the US and in the UK, there are actually advertising watchdogs and organizations, and even some policies have been enacted into law wherein influencers need to be transparent and say hashtag ad, hashtag sponsored post, hashtag partner post.
Mm.
And of course, a lot of social media channels like YouTube, Pinterest, and IG Shop, you know, so shoppable posts, influencers themselves will become a sales channel for all these brands. Mm. It's not just awareness and consideration up there in the upper part of the marketing funnel. Lower funnel customer actions will be affected as well, because people can now click a button and shop instantly on social media.
You mentioned transparency. How about that in Asia?
As far as I know, there is no groundbreaking policy or watchdog organization such as that in the US and in the UK that is clamping down on influencers.
Mm.
I think in Asia, it's also because influencers are kind of like celebrities, and the whole acceptance of that kind of model.
I asked the question actually at a PR Newswire event.
Okay.
A few months back, last year, a little while ago. And the answer was, my question was something like, you know, should influencers and channels be revealing that it is an actual paid partnership?
Mm-hmm.
And they pretty much didn't have an answer. And the answer, the answer was, you know, it's not happening in Asia.
Well,
that was their answer.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't consider myself, you know, belonging to any of these influencer tiers. And so when I do have an opportunity of being invited to an event or getting invited to a wine dinner or something like that, I would post my photo on Instagram, and I would put hashtag partner post, hashtag, or if I didn't, I could very well say hashtag I paid for this.
Right.
You know?
Do you think we might actually talk about this after my next question a little bit, but do you think there should be more of it? More of revealing that you are being a partner?
I think so. Although here in Vietnam specifically, YouTube is highly, you know, regarded as the place or the channel for influencers, more than Instagram, more than Facebook.
Yep.
YouTuber. YouTuber, YouTube conference.
I've had people come up to me and so
just holding. You a YouTuber?
Well, just holding a camera, and I've got like 5 YouTube videos on my channel. Oh no, there might be about 10 now, and they YouTuber. Come up and they go, "You YouTuber?
You a YouTuber?"
It's actually quite cute, and I just sort of go, no." But anyway,
that is exactly you know, like the power of YouTube creators here in Vietnam. YouTube has made the groundwork in you know, providing tips and tricks and seminars and trainings.
Everyone has the tools.
Exactly.
Now, you know, the technology.
But yeah. I do hope that within these YouTube conferences or, you know, fan days and stuff like that, that they do train their influencers, their creators, to be more transparent in these kinds of. So, yeah.
All right. So we've spoken a little bit about influencers, but how are they important to this whole what do you call it, ecosystem, you know?
Well, when you talk about importance, I would like to, you know, throw two values that they provide. Okay? Marketing is all about value, you know, you giving the consumer value, and as a brand, you're reaping the value because of that value you've given back, you know?
Yep.
So maybe in order to answer that question, we should start with, like, you know, what kind of influencers have we got and what kind of value can they offer?
Right.
Right.
Okay. So yeah, they seem to get thrown into the same bag.
Yeah. But so let's start from the most expensive to higher to the most cost effective, I guess. Okay. So you've got your celebrity influencers. Yep. So they obviously are big celebrities, actors, singers, actresses, and they have a global reach.
Right.
20 million plus followers, okay? Then you got digital creators, and that's about 1 million to 19 million followers.
So who fits into that category, digital creator?
People who are creating original content.
Right, okay.
On YouTube, for example.
Yeah, right. Okay. Like Sunnyside on,
yeah,
on
sure.
great yeah. whatever food review show.
And then Instagram. So it's not just YouTube that has a creator program.
Right.
Instagram has their own creator program now as well. Okay. Then you've got micro influencers, which is about 250K to about, you know, 999K.
Wow.
And then further down, you've got nano influencers who have about 1,000 to 5,000K followers.
Okay, keep moving down the list.
And then, it depends on how many family members you have. Then at the bottom of the tier, and who knows?
I'm glad you said tier then.
So at the last part, you have the niche influencers.
Okay.
And here we're not talking about audience size at all. We're talking about the specialism that they have.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
And then we've got us.
Well, I thought for a moment I was a micro influencer, but I'm about 249,000 out. But I could fit into the nano influencer at 1,000 to 5,000 followers.
What, combining all your social accounts? Sure.
Anyway, yeah.
So, they're important in terms of that kind of quantitative and qualitative values that they provide to both the brand and the consumer.
Yeah,
so
right.
The tiering mechanics of influencer types, unfortunately, is based primarily on the quantitative variables, you know?
Mm.
But what is more important, I think, and I'm not just saying this because I'm part of, you know, of a channel that is considered, you know, outside of the tier.
I'm really happy about that. You could have said pile or heap or bottom of the pan or whatever.
Okay. So I think, though, is the lesser seen importance is the qualitative variables,
right.
You know, and because they cannot be counted by numbers, they seem to be relegated as, like, okay, second priority or not important at all.
Yep.
So, but it should be.
Well, I guess at the end of the day, business owners are accountants as well, and they respond to numbers,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, that's right. I'd like to throw in more stats.
Yeah, if
that's
sure.
Okay. Okay.
Sure, sure.
So according to a May 2020 article from the World Advertising Research Center, digital creators had an engagement rate of around 0.6%.
Hang on. 0.6%. So let's say if you've got 10 followers, you can expect 0.6 of those to engage with your content each time.
Yes. And when you say engage, there are many kinds of engagement metrics. It could be an impression. It could be a like. It could be a comment. It could be a share.
Right.
Okay. So digital creators with an engagement rate of around 0.6% outperformed both celebrities at 0.4% and outperformed micro influencers at 0.35%.
Okay.
Woo. And then the research, the research further says that the trend is going towards nano influencers.
Yay! Where's my applause button when I need it? Damn it, I wasn't prepared.
So the trend towards nano influencers, of course, is partly because they are paid lower rates and they would be more agreeable to product exchange deals and, you know, percentages of sales, you know, not direct payments of here's your $1,000 for showing up at my event opening. But nano influencers were seen to drive very high engagement thanks to the strong connection with their audiences.
Right.
Because if you're nano influencers, you can actually respond to your followers personally.
Yep.
On a daily basis. Yep. You don't have a chat bot or a robot or a PA doing it for you.
Yep.
You know? So brands really need to work with a lot of them also to achieve a sizable reach. So for example, big brands would hire a celebrity, but then in their own local, you know, geographics where their franchise is being sold, then they would engage nano influencers. Look, again, I'm not saying this because we have a channel, but in my humble opinion, influencers are supposed to be highly knowledgeable about a specific niche subject.
Right.
Okay. But from what I've seen, only a few are really authentic personas here, you know, most influencers in Vietnam. And once they've become popular, they default into becoming paid mouthpieces for just about anything, transitioning into a into the celebrity tier.
Okay.
You know, so, okay, look, I'm not saying you should put yourself in a box or stay in your lane and not get paid like a celebrity. Of course not. But there's just seems to be a lack of respect for authentic influencers, mostly micro influencers, you know, nano influencers who actually do their homework.
Okay.
They spend time perfecting their niche and are actually on the ground trying to build authentic relationships with their community offline, you know, with the brands and the restaurants and the bars, et cetera.
And we haven't even mentioned ClickFarms yet.
Oh my gosh. No.
that can be for another time. Well, thanks heaps for that, Mel. Now you're going to come back for the last two segments of the show,
right? Yeah, sure. Yep.
Yeah, cool. Oh, and just before we jump to the next segment, I forgot to ask you who your favorite influencer is.
Oh, wow. Is that even a question? At Matt Cowan Saigon.
Oh, it's good to know I have an influence on someone.
That's plus one on our numbers. We can reach macro. We can reach micro tier in no time.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's good to know. Thanks, Mel. Now, just to double check, you're coming back, right?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thanks for sticking around, Mel, to finish off the show.
Yeah, I heard there were drinks.
Well, jeez, doesn't take much. Now, well, it takes a bit to bribe you onto this show. Now, just before we get into Get Excited, I want you to try something.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm just going to – let's swap positions.
All right.
And I'm just going to duck over to the fridge.
Cool.
I'm going to grab a beer out and I want you to do a blind tasting.
Now,
you've got your little mask
little
there.
Okay. Ready.
All right.
Okay,
well, while you get yourself into position, I'll duck over to the fridge and grab a sneaky beer out.
All right. Check mic one,
okay,
two, three.
So, Mel,
yeah,
I'm going to try one beer. I'm going to open it for you.
Okay.
And I'll get onto this mic.
Okay.
What I want you to do, let me put my headphones on. I'm going to open it and you have a taste. Tell me what you think about it.
All right.
Tell me what you think's in it, perhaps even who makes it or who brews it. And perhaps even if you game, how much alcohol's in it.
All
and
right.
ABV and IBUs. How many IBUs, bitterness units, are in it?
Yep.
Okay, let's do it. Now this might give it away a little bit.
Okay, it's in a can.
Oh.
Am I correct? It's,
yeah, you got that one right.
Yeah, okay. So you better okay, I don't want to spill anything on the machine.
That's a bit fun. I'll give yeah, have a sip of that. Hang on, let me turn that. Just don't put it down because you might electrocute us.
Smells fruity.
And I've secretly got the camera running as well, so we're recording this at the same time.
Am I getting like a beer mustache?
No.
Okay.
No. Although it was a very foamy beer. Comes in a can.
Yeah, that's why I asked, because I feel that, you know, it's there's a lot of thickness to this beer.
Mm. Yeah, it was very creamy looking for sure. So tell me about the taste.
It's very fruity. It's not crisp.
Okay.
It's very thick.
Oh dear.
This is I need some more.
Yeah, you love your beer, don't you? Oh no.
Well, look, the alcohol, the ABV is definitely somewhere between 4.6, probably.
Okay.
4.6, yep. I would say. It's a fruity beer.
It's fruity, so it's not too bitter.
No.
Okay.
It's not a...
Would you buy it regularly?
It's not a tropical fruit. It's definitely like, how do you say, you know when we were traveling through Australia, the core, like, what do you call those fruits? Stone fruit. It's definitely a stone fruit.
Okay.
Peach.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Yeah.
Do you like it?
Yes.
And would you, you know, once you find out the name of it, would you, the next time you go into a craft beer joint, would you order it?
Yeah. But yeah. Who gave this to us anyway?
Well, I've joined this group. It's called beerbox.vn. Now, they're not sponsoring us. I paid for it.
Okay, wait a second. So how much would this be? Because that's also a consideration point for
me. Well, what they do is they each month they have a selection of 6 beers, a variety of different craft beers mostly from Vietnam.
Yeah.
Some from the States, I suppose. We've had a couple of beers from the States.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that you get to taste a variety of different craft beers once a month, delivered to your door. $499,000
for a
six pack delivered to your door.
Okay. So it's like all in cans or?
No, cans and bottles.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, is this an imported beer? Because, you know, you can never tell anymore because the quality of beer, being made in Vietnam, you know, is like up to par.
Much better now, isn't it?
So, this is a craft beer, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. The beerbox.vn concept is all about craft beer.
Mm.
So, you know, it's targeted to people perhaps like you who, yeah, just put it straight down there. Yeah, that's good.
it's a bit cold.
It's targeted to
my hands are cold.
Like you, Mel, who don't drink a hell of a lot of craft beer. So you get to taste a variety of beers.
Okay.
But also for people like me who are into it and who mightn't, you know, try certain beers because we're fairly particular sometimes. Well, I am about what I drink. I don't stray too far. So it's a good opportunity for me to try beers as well.
Well, you know, I wouldn't say that my taste level is like for all women. You know, I'm not gonna generalize what women would like, but me personally, I prefer sweet beer.
Okay.
I prefer beer that is, you know, obviously not gonna make me fat.
Yep. Talking to the mic. She's still got her blindfold on. Okay, so basically the wrap-up of this particular beer, I'm going to try one in a minute, is that Mel would definitely go out and buy it, probably depending on price.
Does it come in draft, like when I go to like a restaurant or a bar?
Yep.
All right.
I think up until recently it's been seasonal. But now it's one of their permanent offerings, I believe. So take your...
I think I've had this before.
You probably have. Take your mask off. What is it?
Oh, it's a Pomelo IPA.
Yeah, it's the Pastor Street Brewing Co. Pomelo IPA. Can you just give us a little bit of a rundown what it says on the can there? All right. How many... ABV?
6.2. Oh, my God.
Oh, it's a 6.2.
I'm way off. I said 4.6.
Yep. And so it's obviously not very bitter. No. What's the IBU?
31.
Yeah, it's fairly low.
Yeah.
So hence you'd like it. And it's Pomelo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
You give that the thumbs up.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will.
All right. Nice. Now, it's thirsty work. It's my turn. Okay, let's swap chairs.
All right.
I'll put the blindfold on.
All right, so.
Yeah, I can't see, so that's a start.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep, let me just put my earphones on.
Where's my mic?
Okay. And I hope that I can make the fun sound effects. So just, first question.
Just be careful. They were lying down in the fridge, I think. Okay. If it was, ooh, that sounds like a bottle. Ooh. Oh, listen to that. Right. Okay, so this is a giveaway. I've had plenty of these before.
Okay.
I think.
No?
I think.
Okay.
All right. Okay, I'm going to whack my teeth on. Okay.
All right.
Oh, hang on. Let me.
So first the smell. God. What does it smell like?
Oh, it's very very fruity.
Mm-hmm.
Very, yeah, very florally, fragrant. Lots of Fs. Fun. Feisty. No, I can't.
Yeah, close your eyes.
Yeah, I have. I've got my eyes closed. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
Smells really good.
Okay. Tip it in.
It actually smells a lot like a jasmine IPA from the Pastor Street guys, but I know for a fact I don't have one of those in my fridge at the moment.
Okay. And?
It's not very bitter.
Okay.
I reckon it's around about 30s.
I had a 31 earlier.
40.
Okay, 30 to 40.
IBU. It's very, it's very light for me.
Okay.
In terms of bitterness. And so I can't really get the alcohol coming through a hell of a lot.
So do you find, is it like a statistical correlation with if the alcohol content is not high, the bitterness is not high?
Good question. Let me think. I think generally your bitterness might be up a bit, but it's the hops that makes it bitter, right?
Okay.
So I guess it depends on how much, how many hops or how much of the hops goes into the mix in terms of bitterness.
So this kind of beer is not something that you would order normally. You're saying that it's too light for you?
No, I'm just trying to work out what it is because I know a fair few of the beers around town and I'm just trying to pinpoint it. I'm a massive IPA lover, so I like them really hoppy, really strong.
Okay.
Higher end of the alcohol volume level. So I like sixes and sevens. That sort of percentage. Let me have another sip. I hope this segment isn't going too long for the listeners.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice. Would I buy it? It's not boring. Mm-hmm. There's enough flavor in there. There's a little bit of fizz in there. So it's telling me.
Is it more hoppy or fruity?
Hang on. I think it's definitely fruitier.
All right. So guess.
Oh, what? I know the other one. Is it a brand new one on the market?
Yes.
Oh, that's. I think it's Chad Mitchell's new mixtape called Peaches and Cream.
Okay, so take off your blindfold. There it is.
Yeah, I'm right.
Yeah.
It's a cool label, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very drinkable. I think that's what he's going for.
Obviously. What's the IBV? The IBU, sorry.
40. So it's on 40. It's actually 6.9% ABV. So that's
for such a pink.
That's going to knock your socks off. And
no,
there you
but
go.
This is a bit misleading too. It's like, you know, you've got like the pink label and the heart looking peach with a little.
Yeah. So there you go. That answers your question as well. Do you need a high IBU to have a high ABV?
And it's
so not really. Yeah.
Wow.
So 6.9 is a reasonable strength. Blah. I'm already starting to
slur.
But really nice artwork, isn't it?
Cool.
Okay, there you go. Have it. So in case you're interested in doing something like that, I'm a bit of a beer hobbyist. So the guys from what was it called again?
Beerbox.vn.
They're the guys to hit up. Look them up on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And once a month they'll send you out half a dozen different beers at $499,000 in Saigon, which includes delivery, which is great. And they're also hoping to come up with a whole bunch of other ideas for people who are sort of in the club. It's a bit of a club thing, but it's not exclusive, of course.
Awesome.
Yeah, so cheers. It's time for Get Excited! That wasn't recorded, by the way. Okay then, so let's get excited, shall we? This is a segment where we tell each other what bar, restaurant, cafe, drink, trend, event or food we should all be getting excited about. What have you got, Mel?
Well, I knew that this restaurant was there for a long time, but it's just taken me, you know, quite a bit of months to actually get there. It's called Tasty Singapore.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's at 170 Nguyen Thai Binh in District 1.
Yep.
So it's near like Yersin and Calnet, you know, that area in the middle of District, at the edge of District 1 and District 4.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Just before the canal there, basically.
That's right.
Yep.
So it has Singaporean food.
Yep.
But it also has some Vietnamese food and of course I do believe some Malaysian food.
Righto.
Yep. Yeah, it's really great. I've been there at least three or four times.
This week.
Fried wontons, sambal, prawn and squid.
Yep.
Chili crab.
Yep.
Garlic crab, wonton dry noodles. Mm. So I like the wonton noodle soup, but I also, you know, it's also hard to find really good wonton noodles that are like served dry.
Okay.
You know, spicy, a little bit spicy. The noodles are a little bit crunchy. Mm. So it is called Tasty Singapore. So you got to try the Hainanese chicken rice.
And what about the prices?
It's pretty good. Yep. Look, it's not pretending to be anything else but Asian comfort food.
Yep.
It comes in a fair price. If you go there for a meal, like two people and then a person each orders, a dish with drinks.
Yep.
It'll cost like under 200K.
Okay, that's good.
So, it's pretty
international
good.
Listeners, that's about $10.
Yep. So if you don't eat there, if you're feeling still funny about, you know, going to public places, the food does travel well in both takeout and delivery because the restaurant is also on those food delivery apps.
Righto.
So you can easily find them, get it to go. And if you are eating there, parking is easy.
Yep.
Okay. And it looks clean. The service is fast. And the chef owner is this tall guy. I think he's Vietnamese. You can't miss him because he's very tall. He's always there. And he looks large and in charge.
Okay, awesome. That's Tasty Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, One word for me that's got me excited, that's Raw.
Ooh.
Yeah, Raw Saigon. Took me a while to get around to getting to this place. I'd seen it online and I'd seen it posted in the Bureau Facebook page, the group.
It's in District 7, right?
It's in District 7 and, yeah, it made a real impact. You were there, Mel, when we first went, and I think you'd agree that this place adds a breath of fresh air to the dining scene in Saigon and, importantly, to District 7.
Yeah.
It's something different that's not just pizza, wings,
fried.
Pub grub.
It's not fried.
Yeah, that sort of stuff.
It's not fried or barbecued.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, it's raw. Well, it's not all raw.
No,
but,
they do have steaks, right?
Yeah. Well, on their Facebook page, it's facebook.com/, I think you say forward slash still these days, Raw Saigon. They describe themselves as Saigon's newest cocktail lounge and raw bar. Now, I actually don't think that description does the place justice, and they really ought to think about changing that after all.
Okay.
What's a raw bar?
What's
I'm not really sure
bar?
What that is.
Mm.
I don't want to be critical, but
it is a cocktail lounge, though.
Yeah, well, it's a bar on the second floor and dining on the first floor.
No, but what I meant was, you agree with it being billed as a cocktail lounge?
Oh, upstairs.
Yeah.
Okay. For sure. Cocktail lounge sounds perhaps a little bit posh.
Okay.
I like to think.
Bistro?
This place is kind of in between. It's a casual, I don't know, someone the other day online said, what was it? Casual chic or something
it's
like that.
It's like shabby,
you know,
chic.
Yeah, I mean, I was there in my flip-flops.
True.
Yeah, so there you go. That gives you a bit of an idea. Mm-hmm. I did feel out of place. I probably shouldn't. Yeah, anyway. Now, I don't actually think that description does it justice.
Okay.
So I think first and foremost, they should really be pushing the fun, playful and experimental aspect to their food.
Okay.
It's really exciting the way they kind of stoke your curiosity about the way things taste and the ingredients they're using.
Mm-hmm.
For example, they offer quite a small menu, which I love.
Yeah, you don't have to flip. Too many
just
pages.
That one A4 page. I love that. That was just fresh for me. That was raw. I like that.
And they also have a happy hour menu, which is really good.
So what they've got on the menu is seafood, pasta and steak options.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where the raw bit comes in, they tend to make their own pasta. They make their own burrata.
Yep.
A lot of their ingredients they make themselves. So that's where the raw concept comes in. So, you know, initially a little bit misleading, but once you learn that, you understand, okay, I can see where the concept of raw came from. With their steak options, they only do Wagyu, Wagyu steak, only high-end, you know, best cuts of meat. One of the really exciting things that got me going was the fresh oysters that we got.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I mean, I love them anyway.
Yeah, and they smell, you know, like the ocean, really.
Like a mouthful of the ocean. But they come with this little sort of ramekin of kosher.
It's yellow, that yellow thing.
Yeah, it's well, the definition is like a Japanese-inspired pasty condiment made up of a trifecta of chilies, citrus and salt. They come together in a powerful burst of flavour that livens up a dish, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, the oysters. My taste buds anyway just got off, you know, just – went nuts. This was just this all-round tasty, spicy, citrusy, buzzy feeling in the mouth. It was amazing. And then lo and behold, the owner actually happened to come in and we met him, Chris, and he found out that we like cocktails and he said, here, have a crack at this one.
It's the second time I'm making it.
It's not on the menu. Let me know what you think. And it came out and it was a gin-based cocktail with chartreuse.
What's a chartreuse?
Well, it's a liquor it's hard to describe in flavour, but it's a little bit sweet.
Okay.
Strong in flavour and it's quite floral.
Okay.
And I don't know the full ingredients of this cocktail, but there was also a lot of citrus in it.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
I think there was like a lemon zest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a, little lemon zest.
Mm-hmm.
What do you call it? Little.
Yeah.
In it, dropped
twist,
in it.
Like twist.
A twist, yeah. That was very nice in itself. But then it came with a little small side of blue cheese.
Mm, yeah, that's right.
And wow.
I remember we
I'm
were
like, what's going on here?
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute, because if you sip the cocktail by itself, it's just okay. There's like a little bit bitter tinge.
Nice. Yeah, it was nice. I liked it a lot.
But
yeah.
When you ate the blue cheese, then drank the cocktail again.
Oh,
the bitterness. You know, that sharp edge.
Yep.
Which is really interesting because blue cheese is sharp. And this drink without the blue cheese was sharp. But it's like, how do you say it? Like a negative and a negative equals a positive? Mm. Or
it was just
some
like
kind
two
of
different
chemical,
drinks.
Like a chemical reaction happened.
Yep. So that's Raw Saigon. Look them up on Facebook. Raw Saigon, R-A-W, Raw Saigon. Can't recommend it enough. Mm-hmm. It's reasonably priced. They have their happy hour from 5 to 7:30.
Yep.
And the happy hour not only includes select drinks.
But tapas as well.
Yeah, so the oysters are it's 30%,
it.
I think.
Yeah.
30% off at the moment anyway. That was a couple of weeks ago. So get on it. Get out to District 7 and go to Raw Saigon. You'll have a really good time, really good experience. Now, this is a new little segment I've come up with to wrap up the show with a bit of fun. Of course, it involves taking the piss out of Instagram posts. I've called it Insta-worthless.
Hashtag Insta-worthless.
Well, this segment came about because of the interesting updates I see on Instagram.
Oh.
I'm looking at your face, Mel. And I thought it would be fun to share some of them, so I'll go first.
This is from your news feed. Matt follows all these.
Well, I've got to keep abreast of everything going on Instagram. Now, I'm not sure whether I should say this Instagram handle, but this particular one here in a recent post.
No, you should.
I should.
We got to shout them out.
Okay.
You know, so, for all the words of wisdom that they give to us.
Yes. That's how it also came about. The profound status update. Please take this
seriously.
Not seriously. No. No, we're just having a little bit of fun and we don't mean to be mean, but we just, I wanted to give it a crack. Sunny.vo_3006 in a recent post, she said, brace yourself, Mel.
Okay.
Sweet words are always have a trap, but does everyone want to step in?
Oh, wow.
Are you following, Mel?
That's profound.
Have you ever stepped into the trap of sweet words? No. No. I was asking you. That wasn't part of that. That was my question to you. I made that up.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Wait, she goes on.
Mm.
Quote, anyway, I still like the taste of wine.
Mm.
Either way, it never deceived my taste buds.
Oh.
Has anything ever deceived your taste buds, Mel?
Dalat red wine. No, but actually Dalat red wine is really good for cooking. Wow. I mean, these words of wisdom, you know, are hashtagable, definitely.
Yeah.
But, you know, it makes you wonder, is she talking about somebody like a person or like what was the photo? You have to give context to these things. Yeah. What was the photo that accompanied this Insta quote?
Just the usual in a bikini, turned to the camera with bum poking out.
Okay.
You know,
with or without shades.
Run of the mill.
Okay.
You know, or she may have been in the gym.
And taking
a photo on a, what do you call those big yoga ball things? Maybe something like that.
Oh, wow. Very profound.
We're also going to have a bit of a laugh at our friends at Guan Ut Ut.
Oh, what did they say?
It's a barbecue joint in Saigon and I couldn't swipe past this one.
Okay.
I couldn't scroll away from it.
Mm. Was it a sponsored post or was it organically in your feed?
Just organically. It popped up. Yeah.
What did they say?
Okay. I want you inside me, he whispered.
Oh, my God.
You dirty chicken bacon ranch sausage dipped in buffalo sauce.
Oh, my God.
Now,
what was the photo? Again, context.
I think it was just a platter.
Okay.
A platter. It wasn't a porn shot or anything, okay. But I'm not sure if I should ask you this, Mel. But
no, go ahead.
What would you want that inside you?
Oh, what wouldn't like I dirty, want inside
a
me?
A dirty chicken bacon ranch. Yeah, anyway, okay, we should move on.
No,
we're running out of time with the show.
I'm Filipino, so I'm always good to have a nice lab of pork done in any way in me for sure.
Oh, my God.
But, okay, with sauce on the side, preferably, because I don't like it messy.
Okay, all right, come on. Now...
Who does these?
Is this going to get censored?
Who does these posts?
Have you got anything? You're going to pass this week.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to pass.
Might get listeners to send some in. If you've got any profound social media, so Facebook, Instagram, updates from people you follow or they just mysteriously pop onto your feed, send them in because they're life-changing, really.
Yes.
And you couldn't think them up yourself.
No.
You could just...
No, you know, we could create a whole series of Hallmark cards with just these amazing quotes that
we have.
I'd
do that. Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening in, and thank you, Mel, for joining me.
Thank you. No worries.
It was fun and informative, although I've found out that I'm not even a micro or a nano influencer.
Sorry to burst your bubble.
I'm at the bottom of the heap.
I knew that,
but yeah, that's just reinforced it. Now, don't forget to go to our website, thebureauasia.com, for plenty of stories and info about Vietnam and the region. And you can also check us out on Facebook and Instagram, as long as they haven't blocked us already. Where at, Mel?
At the Bureau Asia.
Yeah.